Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 28th, 2013, broadcasting from the Carver Center for Public Radio. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Dr. Marcus Erickson, director of the Five Gyres Institute in Los Angeles, will speak about his firsthand experiences with the massive Mid-Pacific Ocean garbage dump in a talk called Saving Our Synthetic Seas. The free talk will begin at 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, April 4th in Giffel's Auditorium in Old Main on the University of Arkansas campus.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
Ahead on Ozarks, the steel mill superproject continues to be examined, scrutinized, and debated. Grant Tenniel with the Arkansas Economic Development Commission talks about the project. Plus, Thomas Hilton, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, is coming to Fayetteville next week to talk about his crusade for smarter city planning. We'll talk to him later on this program.
But first, the Arkansas House will likely consider an override today of a veto by Governor Mike Beebe of a bill that would require voters to present a photo ID at the polls. Yesterday, the override passed in the Senate.
With a vote of 21 yeas, 12 nays, you have voted to override the governor's veto of Senate Bill 2, sent to the House.
Republican Senator Brian King was a sponsor of the bill. Before the vote, he disputed claims by opponents of the proposal that there is not a problem with election fraud in Arkansas.
As I've said in this, and I've worked on voter fraud and our election reform issues for a long time, been a former election commissioner for a brief time, and we know that election fraud is happening here in Arkansas, and the people that's been denying it have found out that we do have election fraud here.
Opponents of the bill have suggested minorities and senior citizens will be most impacted by a photo ID requirement.
The Arkansas House of Representatives passed a resolution yesterday to reaffirm Constitutional Amendment 83 and support the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The largely symbolic vote came as the Supreme Court considers cases this week on the constitutionality of same-sex marriage. Amendment 83, which was approved overwhelmingly by voters in 2004, banned recognition of same-sex unions in Arkansas. The resolution, introduced by Republican Representative Jim Dotson of Bentonville, received emotional responses by legislators. Among them, Democratic Representative Deborah Ferguson of West Memphis.
This resolution is hurtful to our sons, our daughters, and an entire community who hasn't chosen to be gay. It says that we don't value them as equal citizens. What are the consequences of intolerance? What are the consequences of saying we value some lives less?
Representative Dotson responded, saying the resolution was meant to give legislative members an opportunity to weigh in on what he called one of the most decisive issues of our time. He refuted arguments that he meant harm.
I don't believe I have hatred toward anybody, but I don't believe we need to redefine marriage that's been around for thousands of years.
Meanwhile, Representative Justin Harris of West Fork, a Republican, said the resolution testified to values held by many.
Although they may not be mainstream with the liberal media, they are mainstream with the heartbeat of everyday Arkansans.
Democratic Representative Warwick Sabin of Little Rock eventually had to excuse himself from the well from being overwrought with emotion. But before doing so, he spoke against the resolution, asserting that the struggle of gays to marry was about liberty.
I think if two consenting adults are willing to enter into a lifetime relationship with each other, then I don't see why that shouldn't be recognized by the government.
In other legislative news, a bill that would remove water quality standards for mineral content in small streams in the state is headed for a Senate vote this afternoon. House Bill 1929 would remove a special permit requirement for businesses that discharge minerals such as chlorides and sulfates into streams. The bill's sponsor, Republican Representative Andy Davis of Little Rock, says that current standards apply to water that will never be used as drinking water.
We've got a standard on a lot of bodies of water in the state that's not practical, and it's costing us millions of dollars to go through environmental studies to remove.
However, environmental and citizens groups gathered in the Capitol yesterday to voice opposition to the bill, saying it would harm water quality in the state. Glenn Hooks of the Sierra Club says the state has high water quality standards for a reason.
Every waterway is presumed to be either drinking water or potential drinking water, and so because of that, it has some special protections. This bill removes that presumption, so it's going to make it much easier to pollute our waterways.
Teresa Marks, director of the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, spoke against the bill in House committee last week, saying all the streams considered in the bill shouldn't default to a non-drinking water standard.
Arkansas Tech University will soon be searching for a new chancellor for its Ozark campus. Current Chancellor Joe Alice Blondin has been chosen as the next president of Clark State Community College in Springfield, Ohio. Dr. Blondin will begin her new job July 1st, but under her tenure at ATU Ozark, enrollment at the school has increased by 562%, and 16 new academic and technical programs have been introduced. Dr. Blondin joined the ATU Ozark staff in 2005 as the school's chief academic officer and was promoted to chancellor in June 2006. The college will begin a nationwide search for a new chancellor this spring.
Next month, the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville will play host to two cultural icons, one each from the world of computers and music, both of whom are known for their philanthropy and interest in education. Steve Wozniak, who co-founded Apple Computer with Steve Jobs and Ron Wayne in 1976, and designed the revolutionary Apple I and Apple II personal computers, will speak at Barnhill Arena at 7 p.m. Sunday, April 7th. Then at 7 p.m. Monday, April 29th, award-winning singer-songwriter John Legend will also speak at Barnhill Arena.
Give me the green light, give me just one night.
Besides selling millions of albums worldwide, Legend is also an activist for education and sustainability. He supports programs that combat poverty and the spread of HIV and AIDS. Both lectures are sponsored by the U of A's Distinguished Lecture Series. They're free and open to the public.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team wrapped up a two-game series last night against Mississippi Valley State. The Razorbacks defeated the Delta Devils 2-1 at Dickey Stevens Park in North Little Rock, meaning they swept the series. And it's five now wins in a row for the Razorbacks. They're 19-7 on the year. They will open up an SEC series against Mississippi State Friday night at Baum Stadium in Fayetteville.
Tonight, cloudy skies with a 50% chance for showers after 8 p.m. in northwest Arkansas, a 40% chance for showers in the Arkansas River Valley, overnight lows in the low 50s. Tomorrow, Friday, cloudy with a 60% chance for precipitation and a high near 64 in northwest Arkansas, cloudy, 40% chance for showers and thunderstorms and 67 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow evening, cloudy and a 70% chance for showers and thunderstorms. Lows from 49 to 54.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas legislature this week continues to examine a proposed $1.1 billion steel mill to be located in Osceola, creating, supporters say, more than 500 jobs in the process. This deal triggered provisions of Arkansas Amendment 82, which allows the state to float bonds to finance incentives and bonds for the deal. $125 million has been proposed in this situation. Last week, independent reports on the matter were released by the legislature. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked with Grant Tenniel late last week. Tenniel is the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. Roby asked him about one assessment in a report that says the state agency didn't fully consider uncertainties connected to the project.
Overall, I think that the IHS report is fair and actually confirms our assessment of the project. If you read what they said that some of our predictions may have been rosy, as you put it, if everything goes badly.
Okay.
And as I've said from the very beginning of this project, and when I spent close to 6 hours in front of committees of the whole in both houses of the legislature, there's risk here. There is risk in any business endeavor. We feel as though we've spent a year understanding the risk and mitigating it as best we can. IHS went on to say that although there's risk, the state has put appropriate clawback and penalty provisions into its agreement. So what they're saying is, if everything goes badly in the marketplace, the mill is not likely to return everything it should to the state. But if the mill doesn't perform the way it's supposed to perform, then the state has the ability to ask for and receive its money back.
So you feel comfortable with the clawback provisions in there that if things go sour, that you still got state protection on this?
We do.
Let's talk about one of the key assumptions for this independent assessment, one of the assessments that you guys have done. Delta Trust has done this for one of the investors in the project, the Arkansas Teacher Retirement System. Really kind of looks at the potential market size for the steel
right.
that Big River wants to produce. This report, this independent legislator report, actually says there is market out there for it.
It does.
You feel good about that?
I feel very good about that. And I think that it indicates that Big River's plan to target areas of the steel market that are growing, where there's demand, and where there's not as much supply in the United States is going to provide them with real opportunity. I've said over and over and over again that what Big River is trying to do is look out into the future, where the marketplace is going, and put a project on the rails now that will be ready to meet that demand when it appears.
IHS also says, though, or suggests at least in my interpretation of the executive summary, that if another major player were to enter that market, that it could be a, quote, zero-sum environment. You agree with that assessment?
I think that that assessment is somewhat fair and somewhat accurate. I think that if Big River gets its plans announced and we approve them, the likelihood that somebody else is going to come along right after them and announce a plan to go after the same market is somewhat slim. But I think that ultimately what the IHS report says is that there is uncertainty in business. And I think we all knew that there was uncertainty in business when we started working on this project. I have an enormous amount of confidence in Mr. Corrente and in the Big River team. And a lot of that confidence is based on the fact that they've done this before, fairly recently. The mill that they built in Columbus, Mississippi is thriving, employing more people than they had promised it was going to employ, and producing more steel than they originally promised they would produce.
We're running short on time here. Let me ask you what happens. If the legislature does not approve this bond issue, the $125 million bond issue, does the deal die?
Yes.
So what happens if Arkansas legislators kill this super project? Do you think that it diminishes the potential for other projects to come to the state of Arkansas in the future? Or do you think people look at this and say they did their due diligence, they didn't feel it was a good deal, we took a pass?
Well, I think it largely depends on the outcome of some of these hearings that we have coming up. It's certainly understandable if, based on factual evidence and sound economic theory, that we take a pass. If we send the message to the world that we are intolerant of any risk at all, I don't think we'll get an opportunity to look at another project.
Roby Brock talked with Grant Tenniel, the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, late last week. You can hear more from that conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
KUAF's Spring On Air fundraiser begins Monday, April 1st, and we're looking for some challenges. This is KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale, and you can help us encourage listeners who have never contributed to KUAF before by contacting us today with your challenge grant. Call or email us with your name and the amount of your challenge. Then when the fundraiser starts on April 1st, we'll use your challenge to match the gifts of first-time donors. They'll be doubling their money to KUAF, and you can help us reach our goal of $160,000. If you'd like to make a challenge, call Molly at 575-7259 or email us at kuafinfo@uark.edu. Thanks a lot.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thomas Hilton cares about towns and cities in the United States. He is the author of the book Save Our Land, Save Our Towns, and the president of a nonprofit organization of the same name. Both the book and the organization make the case for comprehensive, forward-thinking city planning. His articles about urban sprawl, the need to re-examine our car culture, and on better ways for people of all ages, abilities, and economic levels to interact with each other are published in newspapers around the country. In 1990, by the way, he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing while the editor of the Mercury, the daily paper in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Thomas Hilton will speak on the University of Arkansas campus Thursday, April 4th, and he is with me on the phone. Thomas Hilton, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Was there a singular event or series of events that led you to lead a crusade for smart city planning?
Yes, there was, as a matter of fact. I live in a traditional pedestrian-oriented town of Pottstown, which is about 35 miles northwest of Philadelphia, has about 22,000 people. And in 1982, our school district had a lovely high school across the street from my house, which they decided to close because of a declining enrollment, and they demolished the high school. And it was such a waste of a great building. And they're building new ones on the fringe outside of town, that it really got me thinking about how we haven't really been improving our quality of life by sprawling out into the countryside and abandoning our traditional towns. So that's what got me started.
You make the case in your book and in the documentary that's been on many PBS stations that the right kind of planning can, and this is a limited list, but can lower the cost of living, revive inner cities, protect the environment, and provide equal opportunities for children. You place much of how a city and its people thrive on smart planning, don't you?
That's correct.
What is the single biggest error that cities seem to make when planning?
Well, for most of human history, we built all our communities on a walking scale. And a walking scale is based on the fact that the average person can walk 300 feet a minute. So the average person can walk a mile in about 15 or 20 minutes. And so since that's a normal commute that people have been used to taking, since the beginning really of civilization, right up through the 1800s, we have planned all our towns so that you could walk from one place to another. And even in the 1800s, when trains came along and when trolleys came along, you still had to walk to the train station or the trolley stop. With the advent of the car in the early 1900s, it became possible, certainly after the Second World War, it became possible to move your buildings anywhere, and you could start sprawling all over the countryside. Initially, this seems like a great thing because you can move out there in the countryside and enjoy a spacious yard, fresh air, and so forth. But as we've been doing this over the last four or five decades in ever-increasing amounts, we've emptied out our traditional cities and towns. Now we have to support two infrastructures, the original infrastructure of our cities and towns, which don't have the money and the resources to keep them up, and then a new, very expensive, sprawling infrastructure all over the countryside. And creating all this pavement, which sprawl requires, because while a person is only taking up about 3 or 4 square feet of space, a car is going to take up 100 square feet of space, and then to park it, that's going to be 400 square feet of space. So we've turned an enormous amount of our landscapes into pavement for roads and for parking lots, and it has a detrimental impact on the environment and on our cost of living.
I think a lot of people associate the beginning of urban sprawl with the spread of suburbia maybe in the 1950s. But you write that many of the policies that have led to some of the bad planning decisions stretch back to the 1930s.
That's correct. If you recall, Franklin Roosevelt becomes president. He's facing the greatest economic depression we had ever seen. He brings together a cabinet of experts, and they're brainstorming, and they're saying, hey, we should go out there and use all this vacant space out there in the countryside. It'll be a great idea for people to do. But and they came up with things, for example, as public housing. Let's create public housing. And they would put that in the cities and towns, and they'd concentrate poor people in certain neighborhoods. At the same time, they started offering incentives for people to move out of traditional towns. And it didn't really take off in the 30s, even though the plans were all laid, the ideas were hatched in the 30s. We really didn't have the money during the Depression to build much of anything. And then in the early 40s, of course, we're fighting the Germans and the Japanese in the Second World War. But when the war ends, now there's a tremendous demand for housing. The servicemen are coming home and getting married. We have built up an enormous economic capacity. The rest of the world is in shambles from the war, but we have built up this tremendous capacity to manufacture things. We are by far the wealthiest nation on earth at that point. And so Dwight D. Eisenhower, who had seen the Autobahn over in Germany, which is the first limited access high-speed highway system, he thought that was great. And so after the war, he goes to Congress, and they decide that we're going to build an interstate highway system, which is basically modeled on the Autobahn in Germany. In fact, in my state of Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Turnpike was the first limited-access highway. And that really fostered the people of moving out of cities and towns all across America out into the countryside. Because while the Germans built the Autobahn, they also have very strict land controls about where you can build things, whereas in this country, we didn't. So as we built these highways, we made it really, really easy and attractive to move out of the cities and towns.
What if the toothpaste is out of the tube, though? Recently, trips have taken me to a pair of cities, Surprise, Arizona, and Duluth, Georgia, where the car is king, sidewalks end without warning, and crosswalks are treated like as a suggestion by motorists and not a commandment. Can cities like that, and Surprise is not a huge city. I don't know the population. It's probably about 3,000. But the traffic is horrible, stoplight after stoplight. Can cities like those be saved?
Well, they're going to have to be. And Americans are very good at adapting to circumstances. And circumstances are now going to be forcing us, basically through global warming, on all the impacts that creates. Circumstances are going to force us, and plus the tremendous amount of debt that we've built up, are going to force us to rethink how we arrange our landscapes. And just as it took 50 years to really undermine all our cities and towns across America, it's going to take several decades to go back the other way. But it's already happening. For example, just near me, the city of Philadelphia, which was 100 years ago was the third largest city in the United States, and then now way down, had for 50 years constantly lost population. Well, for the first time since 1950, the city is now gaining population because people are beginning to see the advantages of living in communities where you can walk places you need to go.
Does bad planning contribute to disparities in socioeconomic levels?
Well, we had come up with this idea of, and it started in the 30s with the Federal Housing Administration, about providing mortgages to people, and the bureaucrats came up with the definition of what a house should look like and how many acres, how much land it should be on, and that houses should be segregated from stores, which should be segregated from workplaces. So all this zoning really that came about was cooked up in the 30s but really implemented with a vengeance in the 50s and the 60s. All of this really encouraged people to separate themselves from each other. And so if you want to call that bad planning, I've been to a lot of places that would say, you know what, if we had never gotten into zoning in the first place, we'd probably be better off. And as I like to say to people, if you go back 100 years ago, when there was no zoning at all, no environmental restrictions, no big government, where was everybody living? Well, they were living in traditional cities and towns. Why? Because it made economic sense. It wasn't until the government came along, built the interstate highway system, started subsidizing water and sewer lines all over creation, came up with zoning that said we're going to have a separate area. This separate area of a community is for offices, and this area over here is for factories, and this area here is for single-family houses, and this area is for apartments, and we're just going to hop in our cars and drive in between all these zones. Well, it doesn't work.
Wow. So are you advocating for less zoning?
I'm advocating for thinking about a culture change. Zoning can be good if it's done properly. And I actually wrote the zoning ordinance for our town of Pottstown, in which we're looking at, in our zoning ordinance, first of all, we're giving discretion to the municipality to do the right thing, but we're more interested in how things fit together and what they look like than actually separating land uses. So there's nothing wrong with having apartments and offices and single-family houses all in the same place if they're designed pleasantly. Parking lots, you don't want a huge sea of parking. And we require far more parking than we need in this country to accommodate the number of cars. You know, a parking lot is built for Christmas Eve, you know, and everybody is out shopping, and the rest of the year it's empty. Well, we don't want to think that way. We want to think in terms of how can we encourage our communities to be attractive and walkable through zoning, but not by separating things.
In Northwest Arkansas, we have some revived downtowns, Bentonville and Fayetteville, Rogers, Solomon Springs, even Springdale's thinking about it. And people like those inner cores. But what also happens is the bigger towns are where the jobs are. And some people cannot afford the housing in those towns, so they live in the smaller towns that are away. We don't have mass transit to speak of. And so these folks who need the jobs in the town but can afford the living out of town have to drive their cars. And so mass transit might be an answer. But if you're west of the Mississippi and you don't have that infrastructure that has been built, that's very expensive to implement.
That's correct. And it's necessary to be creative in finding ways to find infill housing so you can create more housing near where the jobs are. Another trend that's really helpful this way is, you know, people, more and more people are working out of their houses. The internet is connecting everyone. You can do a multiple of jobs with only having to go into an office maybe once or twice a week. My nephew works for Google, and he lives in eastern Pennsylvania, and twice a week he commutes by bus to Manhattan where the Google office is, but the other 3 days he works out of his house. So we're seeing that increasingly happen. And if you can work anywhere, if you can work in your home anywhere, then you're going to be more attractive to more interested in living in an attractive community that has sidewalks and street trees and distinctive architecture and has lots of nightlife and things to do. And so you'd rather be in a town because the job is where you are. It's not necessarily something you have to commute to. That's an increasing trend.
Thomas Hilton is the author of the book Save Our Land, Save Our Towns, the president of the nonprofit organization of the same name. You can learn more at saveourlandsaveourtowns.org. He'll speak on the University of Arkansas campus Thursday, April 4th. Thomas Hilton, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thank you.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring food and catering and event planners in the April 1st edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available by calling 725-0394 or online nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for daily business e-news.
It is Thursday, March 28th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's the 28th.
It is. It's almost April.
This is when Antoinette and I would say, what?
Yeah.
And today we're going to talk about Saturday events because there's lots of Easter things going on.
Sure. It's Easter weekend.
So at 10 o'clock Saturday morning, there is a parade to celebrate Jesus through downtown Eureka Springs.
Okay.
Because that sounds like a very Eureka thing.
Yes.
There is an Easter egg hunt at 10 o'clock at Reardon Holland Bella Vista for ages 12 and younger. The Easter Bunny will be there at 9:30 for pictures.
Okay.
And you can find out more at 855-5073. There's another egg hunt hosted by the Centerton 4-H at 10 o'clock at Centerton City Park, followed by yet another egg hunt at 11 at Horton Farms west of Centerton.
You can have so many plastic eggs in your Easter basket
by
the time this is over.
Oh, yeah, so much chocolate, it'll be like Halloween. Right. There's a children's Easter event at 11 o'clock at Word of Life Fellowship in Bentonville, mm-hmm. an egg hunt at 11 o'clock at Withrow Springs State Park near Huntsville, the Easter Bells Parade. This is an event that, you know, women used to parade with their Easter bonnets on.
Sure,
that's the song.
And the, yeah, Easter Parade, right.
So they're going to do this at noon in the Upper Historic Loop in Eureka Springs.
Perfect.
And there's another Easter egg hunt at 1:30 near the Food Pavilion and Malco Theater at Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers.
Wow.
They're going to have Strike there.
The mascot for the Northwest Arkansas Naturals.
And last but not least, there's an Easter egg hunt at 2 o'clock, sponsored by the Gentry Chamber of Commerce at Gentry City Park, 4-H groups, and there will be a bike as a grand prize. So if you need a whole passel of plastic eggs, now you know where to look.
All over the place. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Coming up on Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia, international chess grandmaster Maurice Ashley shares his game-winning strategy.
If they screw up, you go kill them immediately.
I feel like I'm talking to a spy half the time, and then I realize we're talking about chess.
Join the grandmaster and me, Ophira Eisenberg, next time on Ask Me Another, NPR's guiltiest and most puzzling pleasure.
Ask Me Another, Saturday morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is John Jetter, who is the conductor and music director for the Fort Smith Symphony. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming back. It's been
sure.
a while.
It has. It has.
You have John Williams, the composer, on tap for the April 20th concert.
That
well,
is
he's
correct.
Not going to be there, but his music will be.
That's right. The program is called The Musical Magic of John Williams, and the concert takes place, the concerts, plural,
yes.
Take place on Saturday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center in downtown Fort Smith.
That's the usual home.
That's the usual. That's our subscription concert. There is a second matinee performance on Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. at the Donald W. Reynolds Community Center in Poto, Oklahoma. That is a second performance on Sunday. And we're literally taking it on the road for, 30, 40 minutes southwest, and we'll be performing at the Reynolds Center in Poto. It's a very nice new facility. I think it's a couple years old now. And it's a multi-purpose facility, but superb acoustics, and we're performing in the main
hall.
The main hall. We set this up about a year ago. And it's a really wonderful place, and the folks in Poto, the city of Poto, who are the sponsors for the concert, are obviously wanting to promote it and use it more and more as a performing venue. But it's multi-purpose, so you can do just about anything in there.
Still get your ticket. If you want to go to the Poto performance, still get your tickets through the same avenues?
For Poto tickets, one can get them online at PotoReynoldsCenter.com.
Okay.
Let me give you, you'll hear paper wrestling, but it's PotoReynoldsCenter.com. And if you go there, you have to click upcoming events. And currently, the buy the tickets now for our concert is listed under a VeggieTales concerts.
Okay.
But they're going to fix that. So just if you see buy tickets, and the tickets are only $10 and $20, or you can call the Poto Center at 918-647-4204.
Now, I know you've taken Earquake in past years into Northwest Arkansas,
yep.
So you've traveled with that. You go into the schools. But have you ever done this, where a concert that you did in Fort Smith also travels to another location?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
We've done it before. And I'm, unless the setup is really nice, I generally don't like to do that. It's nice to do concerts in other communities, and I think it's important. But I want to be in a venue that's really nice. Mm-hmm. Without naming names, I used to work for a much larger orchestra that seemed to spend most of its time doing run-out concerts. Mm-hmm. And they were playing in basketball courts, ice rinks, you know, anywhere. And I think that actually can wear an orchestra down a little bit.
And it's not as fair to the patrons.
Of course.
If the acoustics are not as...
Of course, yeah. Of course. And the Poto Center is very nice.
And relatively new, right?
Yeah. Just, I think this will be the second year.
Yeah.
And so we've done it when the venue's been really nice, and also that the support is there. We want to be able to make sure the concert's going to be advertised, that there's going to be a lot of support to bring audience members in, and the city of Poto's is doing that. So they have a real nice campaign, and they're doing a lot for this one concert.
When you think of a Pops concert, I think the first thing that you might think of is Christmas time, but certainly a close second, if not even more so than Christmas, is John Williams.
Yeah. His music is just, everyone loves it. And it's some of the most well-known orchestral music. Certainly, he's the most prominent film composer. I mean, there are other ones out there, the other names people know, but he's the guy. He worked for many film composers like Franz Waxman and Bernard Herrmann. And
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's
yeah.
a lineage here.
Yeah. And Alfred Newman. So he had that background, and then as helping with orchestration, and as a composer working with them, and then as a studio pianist, he worked for Jerry Goldsmith. So that's terrific. Elmer Bernstein and Henry Mancini.
Oh, well, that's the royalty. That's film royalty that's right. been handed, that's been passed along.
Right. And he did a lot of television work. And his first big films are movies that we all know that we sort of hate to admit that we saw and maybe enjoyed. All those Irwin Allen.
Towering Inferno.
Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake. That was it.
And oh, those are great.
So, yeah. So he wrote those first kind of large-scale scores for him. And then, of course, things just took off.
Yeah, and then... Yeah. Spielberg. And,
exactly. So we're doing, the program that we're doing in concert order is we're doing the theme from Superman, the Superman March.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Film Score in 1978. We all know it's the one with Christopher Reeves.
Right.
The first actor to be offered that role was Robert Redford.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm glad...
I know.
Yeah, that just
there's a whole bunch of crazy choices. Jack Nicholson
as Superman.
Yeah,
that would be interesting.
Kris Kristofferson.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean the list is. I know. It's just crazy. So yeah, that was not. That was a Richard Donner directed that. It's not.
Right.
It's not a Spielberg film.
No.
The second film is the music we're doing is it's the suite from Jaws. Which won the best film score in 1975?
Arguably the most recognizable score in film history?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, arguably.
Arguably.
Yeah, which I mean, is the same as, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The two notes.
Right.
We're opening with the shark theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there's terrific music as they're going out to sea to kill the shark. And then when they're actually in the chase with the shark, John Williams wrote a very complex fugue. It's actually called the Shark Cage Fugue.
Mm.
It's really complicated. And, of course, it's very crazy music that's going on where we have this scene going on. Then we play three pieces from Schindler's List,
mm-hmm.
which won Best Score in 1993. And then finally, we're doing a big suite from Star Wars.
Of course.
Needless to say.
I think you have to.
You have to do
it. If you're going to say John Williams, you've got to have that.
Yeah, and that was the score that really, you know, yeah, Jaws is, well, you know, Jaws is recognizable, but so is Star Wars.
Yes,
and that
it
was
is.
That was the real big boned, big orchestra score that brought large scale orchestral music back into film scores. This is the third all John Williams concert that we've done. This would be in the last 17 years. So mm-hmm. We don't do it often. But what's happened in all three cases, it happened the first two times, and will certainly be with this, it's all John Williams, but I think people will be really surprised at the variety.
Saturday night, the 20th.
Saturday, April 20th, 7:30 p.m. Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center. That's our subscription series. If you would like to call and be put on the waiting list for tickets, it doesn't hurt. And the orchestra, you know, I haven't said much about the orchestra itself, and I know we're running out of time. We'll have, I think, 95 players, and we've done a few things to where it's really gonna sound like the film score. So I to hear a huge orchestra perform, I think it's gonna be great. And I did want to mention that our concertmaster, Elizabeth Lyon, will be the soloist for Schindler's List for those three movements. April 20th, which is a Saturday, 7:30 p.m., Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center. That's 452-7575 for tickets. And then where there are seats available is the second matinee performance at 2 p.m. at the Reynolds Community Center in Poto, Oklahoma. And those tickets are only $10 and $20. There are seats available for that second matinee. One can purchase tickets by calling the Poto Community Center at 918-647-4204 or potoreynoldscenter.com. And tickets are purchasable online.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday nights, beginning at 10 p.m. On this Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, you'll hear music from the guitarist you hear in the background. His name is Charlie Hunter, and he plays a very unique style of guitar. First, he plays an 8-string guitar, and he also plays the bass line and the lead simultaneously. Music from Charlie Hunter. We'll also hear from Bill Frisell, Kenny Barron, Reuben Wilson, Keith Jarrett, and much more. That's the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, beginning at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large for March 28th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Jody Beznoska, who is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. Welcome back.
Thanks. Hello.
Hello.
And let me say congratulations to Walton Arts Center for hosting and the TEDx Fayetteville Committee for putting together what was a wonderful event yesterday.
Well, it sure was. And congratulations to Kyle for pretty much putting the cherry on top of a really awesome day.
It was a lot of fun. And I walked away. Everyone who spoke gave me something. So yep. I hope the next TEDx event in our region, try to go, because it's worthwhile.
It really is. It's a great experience, and you don't – I think the part I love most about it is it's just idea after idea after idea, and you don't have a lot of time to be overwhelmed by all the ideas. You basically just get to hear them and go, oh, that's cool, and then you're on to another, oh, that's cool. It's terrific.
And all of the – in a few weeks' time – you'll be able to go to a YouTube channel.
Correct.
And see them.
Yeah, and we can post yours on our website.
I believe so.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
well, I'm sorry I missed it, but I'm excited to see them.
Well, for anybody who did miss it and is interested to know who the speakers were and how the event went, the website is TEDxFayetteville.com. Yeah. So check it out.
Okay.
Sure would.
All right. Tonight at the Walton Arts Center.
Yes. Tonight at the Walton Arts Center, Mr. Garrison Keillor, who obviously is the storyteller of our age, I would say, in some ways. And he will be doing a show, music-themed show. He'll be he's brought some of his favorite musicians along with him. That show is, if not sold out, there's only like one or two tickets left. So the way to do it is, if you really want to see him, you should come down an hour before the show. I believe the show's at 7, and get on the standby list. And if tickets come open, or if for some reason, tickets get turned back or anything like that, then you can get in. And we usually do pretty well about trying to get people in.
Right, you guys work really hard.
Yes.
Yeah, box office tries really hard to make sure we don't leave anybody standing there. So that's tonight, and I believe that there will be books for sale at the event, and I believe you guys, somebody from KUF will be there as well.
I believe so, actually. Yeah. I think Molly Ron and Rhonda Dillard, I think, will be there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's this evening, and then I believe our next show is Saturday evening. That is the next show on our 10x10 art series, the Circa Dance Company. Mm-hmm. Also almost, if not completely, sold out. I will be there with my parents.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. That's a typical 10x10 show, which means the tickets are $10 or $25, and there'll be a pre-show conversation and a post-show little party in the lobby and lots of fun. Yeah, really fun.
And this one, though it's called Circus, it's dance with kind of circus elements, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. I actually think there might be some people who are expecting to come see a Cirque show and they might get a little surprised, but I think that's all right because it's a dance company bringing Cirque flavor into it. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be great. So that's the last performance, I think, in March for us.
Yeah.
And then we head into April. On Tuesday, the 2nd of April, Washington Regional Foundation will be having their gala featuring Kool and the Gang. Starts at 7 o'clock. Tickets for that, you can get that through our website. So just go to our website and click on the calendar, and you'll see Kool and the Gang there. And then, let's see, the University of Arkansas Inspirational Choir will perform on the 4th.
Right. That's a Thursday.
Yep. And it looks like we have the Sorority Pledge Queen concert on the 5th, which is a Friday. And then on Saturday, we will have the Popovich Comedy Pet Theater. We've been talking about this. Mm-hmm. This is the Russian sort of acrobatic guy who trains rescue pets. If you love animals, if your kids love animals, this is going to be a terrific show to take them to. There are two performances. It's on a Saturday. So hopefully in and amongst, soccer and all those other things that kids have going on Saturdays, you could come see us. It's a show at 10 o'clock in the morning and another show at 4. So two performances on Saturday of Popovich Comedy Pet Theater. And then Anything Goes will be here. Hooray! The 9th of April through the 14th of April. This is the Cole Porter musical that is done by Roundabout Theater Company out of New York. A beautiful, big, sparkly, lush, romantic, escapist Broadway musical. Really, really a lot of fun. It harkens back to the old days of Broadway, for sure. So yeah, we run 7 performances of Anything Goes from the 9th through the 14th. Then looks like the university has some more concerts the following week. Theater Squared will begin their next normal run, their run of next to normal on the 18th.
The last one wasn't normal.
That one wasn't normal. This one is next to normal. No, next to normal is
a musical.
A great musical. Tony Award winning, I'm sure, of something from a couple years ago. It's really intense and really wonderful. And
if you want to learn more, the next Theater Squared Forum open to the public at Fayetteville Public Library is Tuesday night.
Oh, great. Perfect. So that starts on the 18th of April, and Little Big Town will be at the AMP on the 19th of April.
Oh, speaking of the AMP.
Oh, right. Speaking of the AMP, we put a new show on sale, Old Crow Medicine Show, and that will be May 4th. I believe the tickets go on sale. Actually, the tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Right.
Yes. So you don't have a lot of time to get those. So get them soon, because it's going to be a great concert out there. Let's see. Our next big show in April will be American Idiot, which is April 26th, 27th, and 28th. Do you guys know anything about this show?
Well, I know it's inspired by the music of Green Day.
Mm-hmm.
Political in nature, somewhat.
A little bit, yeah. I think it's set after you know, in
9/11,
after 9/11 and the Iraq wars and all of that. And right. it's basically about these three young people who are trying to figure out what to do with their, you know, what is their role? One of them goes to war. Others of them get jobs. Others of them don't, you know, and how do they deal with being young people in that time?
Right.
We had Hair here a couple weeks ago, and we talked a little bit about Hair kind of rocked, no pun intended, but it rocked the Broadway world. Mm-hmm. It was a rock musical. It changed how people looked at how Broadway could look at issues.
And I think, in the 60s.
Yeah. And I think American Idiot is that kind of show for today.
The offspring of that, perhaps?
I think so.
The Descendant?
Yeah. Or it breaks the same kind of ground,
right.
You know, in that it tries to tackle coming of age in a time of war, you know. So, mm-hmm. So that's at the end of April, and that's gonna be lots of fun. And then it's May, and it's Artisphere.
I'm not ready to talk about
that.
No,
I'm not really either. Now, much as I want everybody to go buy lots of tickets to Artisphere, we'll talk more about the programs.
And there's still some things coming together with Artisphere.
Mm-hmm,
I'm hearing about other things. Oh, and we're going to do this too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that always happens.
Because the staff at Walton Arts Center gets together and says, we don't have enough to do yet. There's an hour on that Thursday.
Right. I think our first 2 weeks of May, between Walton Arts Center, Artisphere, and the AMP, I think there will be multiple events every single day, which is awesome, I mean, but busy.
David Henry, mm-hmm. who's always there.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I'm at Walton Arts Center, he is there.
He is. But
he does a lot. Well, any of the tech people.
Yeah, they
The people
are,
we never see, they don't give the curtain speeches, but they're just...
They just work their
butts
off.
The curtain works.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
And the mics work. I mean, they are just, they're always there, you know, and they work so hard. And Kyle, you witnessed it yesterday, you know, they just, if you don't notice them, then they have done their job.
Right.
And, you know, but it's just remarkable how well they do and what they do. We really do have one of the best crews that I think I've ever seen in this business. So they're fantastic.
If you want to know anything else about the shows,
waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600, or come visit us down at the box office. And parking is free till 2 o'clock. We have an exhibition up in the gallery right now called Tectonics, a Arkansas artist named Scott Carroll, that is free and open to the public.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Besnoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 32nd season of entertainment presents the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Jazz Band Friday night at 7:30 at the Fort Smith Convention Center. This performance features student and world-renowned guest artists, including jazz vocalist Rosanna Eckert and Jazz Cats. Tickets and information available at uafs.edu.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and West Siloam Springs.
In Oklahoma.
Yes. And west of Siloam Springs.
Yes, aptly named. It would be odd if it was east. Be very odd. Earlier today, I interviewed John Weidman, who's the librettist for the revival of Anything Goes.
Okay.
And this will be on sometime next week. Anything Goes coming next month.
April
9th. To Walton Arts Center. Let me give you just a part of this guy's resume. We talked mostly about Anything Goes, but he's written three works with Stephen Sondheim.
Okay.
Including Assassins.
Yeah.
He's won 12 Emmy Awards because he writes for Sesame Street.
Aw.
He has his degree in East Asian Studies from Harvard, his law degree from Yale. He's won a Tony. So he has written with Stephen Sondheim and for Elmo.
Harvard, Yale.
Yes.
And Emmys and, okay, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
I love the part that he's written for Elmo and with Stephen Sondheim.
Right. And he'll be right here?
No, he won't be here, but he's talking about,
because he,
and then was asked back in the 80s to help redo the book for Anything Goes written by Cole Porter. So he's trusting enough when he was in his 30s to redo Cole Porter's most famous.
Yeah.
Right. And a very nice guy. Anyway, that'll be on sometime next week on Ozarks at Large. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
You and Antoinette Grajeda will have a brand new show tomorrow.
We will.
And then
Sunday.
We'll see. You're definitely going to be there.
I'm definitely going to be
You're
here.
You're going to maybe have a partner, maybe Antoinette, maybe me.
Right. We're figuring it out. We'll
see. Okay. thanks so much for listening.
Happy Thursday. ¶¶